new album, Festival, is coming out on April 12th. Can you tell us a little bit more about it?
Well, it's a bit darker than the last one, a bit heavier, and I got to play a lot of guitar on this record, so I'm really excited about that, because I'm a frustrated guitarist, and I've practiced and practiced and practiced and got good again. So I'm really happy about that, and I think people who are into Sabotage stuff are going to really like this record a lot, because I kind of went back into the Sabotage type of approach with this, and I'm really happy with it. I think it's the best record that I've done with the JOP guys, so I hope everyone enjoys it as much as we enjoyed making it. We had a great time making this album.
And how long did it take you guys to, I mean, or you to write and
record? Well, we wrote this pretty much on the road last summer when we were on the road in Europe. I wrote a lot of the stuff in the back of the bus, actually, driving from God knows where to God knows where. And, so a lot of this stuff was written on guitar, which I think gives it a heavier sound, too. I didn't really do a lot of keyboard writing on this album. So we spent probably about 4 months recording and a couple weeks mixing. So it wasn't really, we had everything pretty much prepared this time versus the last few albums I've done. I've finished them up while I'm in the studio, so this album was pretty much all prepared and demoed up, and we knew exactly what we wanted to do when we went in, so it wasn't a lot of guessing going on in the studio, so it was a bit quicker.
And concept-wise, the album's called Festival. What is the concept behind this title? And
it's a dream, actually. It was a dream, and we were playing a lot of these festivals last summer, and I had nightmare one night when we were on the road, and it was about this like haunted carnival, and it had like people inside with like no eyes and no arms, and just like, you know, weird people with no mouths, and they were selling like body parts and jars and these booths, and it was just like a weird twisted nightmare. And I woke up and I wrote as much stuff down as I could remember. And I told the drummer about it. I told Chris Kinder, the drummer. I said, man, I had this really sick dream last night. We started talking about it, and that's how the song Festival was born. And I said, oh, this is great. I said, I know. I'll just write about dreams and nightmares. So I don't have to worry about any topics, because they're all from whatever I dream over the next few months. If something's good, I'll jot it down. So a few of them are about dreams. There's a couple songs that aren't, but most of them are from dreams or just a half a dream that I can remember, and that would give me enough to start and tell, like Death Rides a Black Horse was like that. I had the dream about the guy with the sickle coming at you with the eyes, and his eyes were fire. And then that kind of wrote, the rest of the song kind of came from based around that. Winter Haven is all about a dream I had about trudging through the Alps or something. And, so it was all based from that, and then I would just kind of like just run with it and see how I could develop the story a little bit, and it was a lot of fun. It was a different approach.
And what do you think that made you have all this different dreams?
I've always had, from ever when I was little, when I was like a small kid, I used to always have, back when I was growing up, the big thing was to watch Creature Feature.
Oh, yeah.
It was like on Friday nights or Saturday nights, and, when we were little, we'd sit and watch The Wolfman, all that stuff. I would always have nightmares. I mean, like, my mom used to get so mad when my older brother and sister used to let Chris and me watch Creature Feature because we'd be up in the middle of the night screaming because, the Wolfman would be under the bed or something, so. So ever since then, I always have dreams a lot, so I have a very active mind, I guess, when I sleep, so. But it helps in coming up with song ideas.
Yeah, exactly. And, I mean, after all these years that you've been doing this music, is it getting easier to come up with songs or more difficult? What do you think?
That's a good question. To be honest with you, I think it's becoming easier for me musically anyway. I don't know why either, but I never really, knock on wood, I never really run out of ideas for music. They just kind of kind of come to you. It's something that just happens. It's, I don't know, it's really hard to explain to people. It's like just, you pick up a guitar or something and you're not really thinking about, I'm going to pick up a guitar and write something. You just kind of pick it up and start poking around at it, and that when you're not thinking, and that's when something happens. And all of a sudden you start to play something, and then you're like, oh, wow, that's pretty cool. And then you're like, oh, that's really cool. Then you keep playing it. And then it takes off from there, and hopefully you have a cassette or something that's right next to you that you can hit record so you don't forget it, you know. And nowadays with the technology, for me it's become easier because I can practically record the whole song in my living room if I want to, you know, and demo it up like that. Like back in the older days, you know, we had cassettes. You had to, like, all right, put the guitar riff down, and then you'd have to do all this other happy crap to, you know, go out and buy yourself a four-track or something, you know. So it's like that. I guess it's made it easier because of the technology now. It's so much easier to do stuff.
And do you think that this technology has taken away a little bit of the personalized touch that the whole process you described used to have?
I think in recording it has, but that's why I don't record new school. I record old school. I still, you know, I still use real drums and real real instrumentation as I can, so I don't lose that. But I mean, but the technology is what the technology is today. So, I mean, I personally miss using, you know, 2-inch tape and recording onto analog 2-inch tape because it had a very warm sound to it. And I think the new technology, the sound's a little harsher, so you have to make more concessions when you're mixing and things like that to get that warmth back in there. But I don't think a lot of people pay much attention to that. They just kind of let it slide, and therefore some of the music now has got a much harsher sound to me. You know, it doesn't have that big warm sound that or that big bombastic, you know, engulfing sound. It's more cutty.
Yeah.
More sharp, more snappy, you know, and more top end, a lot more top end. So, you know, I mean, but again, it's all to people's preference. You know, some people like that.
Yeah, exactly.
I personally don't, but, you know, I like the bigger sound, the big, warm, engulfing sound, you know, and I hate electronic drums. I can't stand them. And everyone's using them.
So, yeah, exactly.
You know, I refuse to, that's the one thing I refuse to submit to. So.
And what do you think about the bands that, like we've been talking about, they use way too much studio magic, and then you see them live, and they're just, like, terrible?
Well, that's, again, that stuff comes with part of the territory. You know, you do songs that, what I do is I do songs that I devise as that I call album tracks, that it doesn't matter, I'm not going to play them live because it's in, unless I have 100 instruments up there, it's not going to, never going to be able to reproduce it. Unless I use tapes and MP3 players, which a lot of people are using now, and, you know, I mean, it's almost to the point now where you got to use them, unless you want to fill the stage with all kinds of musicians.
Yeah.
You know. So, you know, I mean, but, I mean, it's who the band is. You know, some bands can pull it off. Zeppelin was great at that because they played live and it wasn't nothing like it was on the album, but it didn't matter.
Yeah, exactly.
Because it was better. You know, or it was different, you know. And it's like, so I try to make sure that if I do something live, it's something that I'm going to be able to do without, you know, having to go crazy in the production side.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And do you stay current with the current bands out there, or you just prefer your old classics?
I listen to, you know, I got satellite radio, so I listen to a lot of the satellite radio shows that have a lot of the new bands and stuff, and I like some of what I hear, and then some of it, but a lot of it sounds very much the same to me, so I'm really not, you know, I mean, I really haven't heard a new band that's really, like, blown me away. As far as, you know, I miss, like, the, you know, when's the last great vocalist that came out? You know, when was the last great lead guitar player? Where was the, you know, it doesn't seem to be any of those come popping up anymore. You know, like an Eddie Van Halen or a Randy Rhoads or
now it's getting more common for people to be good guitar players, so everybody just assumes that's the norm.
They just seem to be content with just learning enough to get by.
Yeah.
You know, and that's, you know, that's sad.
And what about for promotion for the new album? I mean, you have some tour dates, and but I didn't saw any festivals up there. Are you guys planning on that?
I'm doing a few. I'm doing Grass Pop and Bang Your Head, and I'm going back over there for a lengthy tour in October. But I did a lot of the festivals last year, so they usually like to give you a year. You know, they don't like booking the same band
yeah.
2 years in a row, so I'll probably do a lot more next year than I'm doing this year, but that's okay. So the record's doing really well over there, and the band's popularity over there has steadily been growing, so.
Yeah, which is something kind of funny, that the band is bigger in Europe than here, in the States. What do you think that's the reason?
I'm not sure. That's a good question. I'm not sure. I don't know.
And does that have to play in the sense that the album was released 2 months later here in the U.S.?
Well, that's something. I don't think that really, because most of the people have it anyway that want it. Got it. So I don't know why they do that stuff, but you know, it just doesn't make any sense to me at all. It's like, nowadays, it's like once it's out, you know, whether it's a U.S. release or a European release or whatever, it's like anyone can get it at any time, so, but that's the business.
And what are your feelings about people that illegally download releases?
Yeah, well, that's part of the thing where, you know, that's why you don't have a lot of great bands out there anymore, because they're not, you know, it affects the band, you know, when the people do that and the bands aren't getting any money for the work that they did, it's like anything. It's like what, you can only maintain, can consist so long before it's just going to end up with the bands not being able to stay together because they can't afford to be together. So, I mean, but, you know, you can't stop people from doing it. People are going to do it, and it's like it's just part of life now. It's part of the way of the world. So, I mean, I personally think it's wrong, but, I mean, if I meet somebody that downloads music for free, it's not like I'm never going to talk to them or anything, but as long as it's not mine.
And do you see a direct impact? Because some other bands say that they don't really see it. Some other bands do. What is your take on that?
I see a direct impact, definitely, because my record sales and ever since that all started happening, everybody's record sales, it's a matter of record. You can look at it and see everyone's record sales have dropped significantly, okay, since all that downloading happened. So it's like anyone can say whatever they want to say. The facts are the facts. If you look at the if you look at the charts and you look at how many albums these people are selling now versus what they were selling, you know, 10, 15 years ago, it's no comparison. And the reason that is because people are getting the music for free and they're not buying the CDs anymore. You know, because they can, or one person buys the CD and then burns it for 50 other people, you know. And that's what happens. You know, you're not selling any records. Yeah, but there's 6,000 people in the crowd tonight. And, you know, they all know the words to the song. So somewhere they're getting the records. I remember playing one show in Italy where the record company guy said to me, he goes, you know, we are very disappointed. We have only sold 3,000 JOP CDs in all of Italy. And I played a show and there was 5,000 people there. I said, well, they all showed up for tonight, didn't they? Then, you know, because you sold 3,000 CDs, but 5,000 people showed up at the show.
Yeah.
You know, and everybody had the CD. You know, when we did the record signing, it was like, and then people had bootlegs of, they already had bootlegs of the CD. You can tell the bootlegs because of the covers. The covers are different. Now,
and what do you think? And what do you think that needs to be change the music industry to keep it profitable, in your opinion?
I don't know. I mean, they have to some way control the stuff that happens on the internet. They have to get a better control on that, where the money goes to the artists who are doing the work. And I think the internet's great for as an information highway and stuff like that, but it's also bad in certain things because it's affected so many other things. I mean, I used to love going to the record store, man. There aren't even any record stores hardly anymore. You know, you can't even. You know, I used to love to do that and get a new album or stuff like that. And now it's like, you know, even all those stores are closing down now because no one's everyone's doing everything online.
And you as a band, JVP, has not completely embraced the digital age like other bands have been doing by releasing stuff early under MySpaces and different things like that?
No, we haven't really done. I mean, we've done some. We put blurbs and stuff out, you know, here and there. But you know, it's something that I don't want to get over involved in because it's time consuming and I have enough problems as it is. Last thing I need in my life is to be stuck behind a computer 5-6 hours a day, you know, trying to figure all this stuff out. So I do, you know, I have my drummer handles a lot of that stuff for me, the internet stuff, and you know, I try to be as much active in it as I can be with the work that I have to do. But the most important thing to me is writing music, and that I don't like a lot of outside distractions. So you know, I find that stuff very distracting.
And talking about other projects and stuff, you're usually pretty busy. Is there anything else coming out later on?
I've got working on some stuff with TSO starting in May, and we've got some projects that we're getting to start recording. And I'm working on the next JOP record already, so you know I'm keeping busy.
So, yeah, I mean, JOP has released pretty much timely releases. What do you think this is due to?
Having to make a living, man. Gotta keep those albums coming out, you know. So I try to do an album a year now, is what I'm trying to do, and even that's hard. So it's like I'm like a year and 2 months or something. So trying to move a little bit faster because, you know, you want to get more product out there, more stuff out there. You got more songs lined up that you want to get out, and you know, the only way to do that is to get an album out and then do another one.
Yeah.
So it's work.
and I read that you keep playing some of the Sabotage songs with JOP, and you're gonna do it for the DVD you guys are gonna film.
Yeah.
Is there any?
I'm gonna play some. Yeah.
Are there any talks about getting Sabotage back together?
No, I mean Sabotage is. As people know it, that band lineup would not. It's impossible for that band to do anything other than what we're doing now, which is Trans-Siberian Orchestras. I mean, that is basically Sabotage.
Yes. Yeah.
And so that band, to me, that band never really broke up. We just kind of took the one name and put it on the shelf because it wasn't doing anything for us. It was hindering us instead of helping us. And changed it to Trans-Siberian Orchestra and just opened up a whole new door. You know, it's like, you know, now we have no limitations. We're not a heavy metal band anymore.
Yeah.
Being thrown in that label, and next thing you know, we had number one song in the country and platinum albums and selling out, you know, coliseums and, you know, and it's, you know, all the guys from Sabotage.
Yeah.
So it's a funny, for me, it's a very ironic, you know, it's just very weird. You know, we spent all those years with Sabotage, 20-some-odd years, beating our brains in, and as soon as we changed the name of the band, we became huge. So, you know, I was like, whatever, that must be the way God planned it. So, you know, I have that band, which is very successful for me, and I have JOP, which is basically the continuation of what Sabotage was.
Yeah.
You know, is basically what it is. So it's like if you took Streets and took all the rest of the albums after Streets, or after Chris died, make it, really realizing it at the time. And once that happened and that thing became so huge, then the need for me to go back to my hard rock stuff is why I formed the JOP thing. And I had a lot of Chris's music that was laying around on cassettes that I've had that I wanted to finish and put out, and a lot of stuff that I wanted to do. So without JOP, no one would have ever heard those riffs of Chris's, or, you know. So in a way, you got with JOP, you got me and Chris working together again, even though he's no longer with us. His music is here, and I have riffs of his and stuff that are, he's a part of every single record I've done so far. He's got co-writing on 4 or 5 songs on every album, including this one. So, you know, I mean, I go to people, how much more Sabotage do you want? Like, you know, you got me singing, you got Chris's music and my music together, and that's what it was like back in the Mountain King days, Power of the Night, Mountain King, Gutter Ballet period. That's what it was like. You know, unfortunately, I don't have him playing, but I have his riffs.
Yeah.
And they've been very helpful. Thank you, Chris.
And then how do you separate writing songs for TSO and JOP? What's your main concern?
Very, very easy for me now, because the TSO stuff is just a whole totally different side, and I no longer have to write a song for that where I'm like, God, I don't know if I can sing this, or I don't know if Zach can sing this. Now it's like I write the song and Paul's like, well, we'll find someone, we'll use someone that can sing it. And we can use an unlimited amount of singers, so, you know, which makes it...
So just to kind of sum it up, so you said that you guys are working on the next JOP album, right?
Yeah, I started putting the material together for that. I'm trying to get a good early head start on that so that I can get another album out quicker.
And the promoting is going on for festival. And if you had to sell a festival off for people in a few phrases, how would you label it or put it?
It's a very epic type of record, and it's a type of record you got to listen to a few times because there's a lot of stuff going on in the background that you'll miss on the first one or two listens. You're not going to hear it. So it's one of those records that I threw a lot of stuff in there in the background that'll keep your ears busy for hopefully many years to come.
Okay. And just last question we usually ask. If you guys had a unlimited budget for a performance, what would you think you would use?
Oh, God. That's a great question. Unlimited budget, huh?
Yeah, in some, like, fantasy world.
Unlimited budget. Oh, Yankee.